Hello, one and all, and welcome back to not only another episode here at the Damage Report, but another Big News Wednesday with JR Jackson. And we decided we're not only bringing JR in, we're doing a bizarro show. I'm still here waiting for my COVID test results to come in. But for some reason, JR, wait, that background looks familiar.
Breaking news on this Big News Wednesday. I've taken over John's space.
Yeah, we told you there was gonna be a big announcement this Friday. It was going to be the complete coup and takeover. You know, America's all about coups these days, so JR is gonna take over the show. He decided to launch it early. It was a surprise attack.
And you can't do it on January 6th because that's what they're expecting, bro.
Exactly. It's sort of cliche at this point. Mm-hmm. But as we're joking about that, I'm just thinking, man, I really hope there's not another coup attempt tomorrow. Anyway, good to have you here, JR. Or should I say, good to have you there. I'm still here, would prefer not to be, but what are you gonna do?
Let's just anyway. You're JR Jackson today. I'm John Iadarola. I need some glasses.
Exactly. I'm not wearing a cool enough t-shirt.
Oh, AOC, I love you.
Hey, get off of my toys. Notice he didn't go for the Dobby or the Bernie or the Stephen Colbert. Anyway, thank you everyone in the audience for being there. We've got a lot that we're going to be talking about through the course of today, including, by the way, the last half hour of the show is going to be an appropriately big international news, meanwhile, in a gigantic jam-packed. Meanwhile, in with some serious stories as well as some ridiculous stories. So that's how we're gonna close out the show. Along the way, we're gonna have to touch base with some of the worst people in the country, including Jesse Waters, who's absolutely awful, and Sean Hannity. Ooh, he was really paying attention to Sean Hannity. How's he gonna come through this whole thing? And he actually gets criticized by Donald Trump. Ooh, spicy. And we got a walkout in Chicago and a whole bunch of other stuff too. Andrew Cuomo, how is he doing? We've got some legal updates for you. But along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. JR, are you ready to do this thing?
Are we ever ready?
Yes. I don't know. Are we ever gonna be like back at the same table together?
I actually thought you'd be here today and I thought it was gonna be really fun, but you know, who knows?
We could have had like you at the main desk on your laptop and me right there. We're sort of together, but alas. Anyway, maybe next week, we'll see. Okay, with that, let's jump into this. So we told you a few days ago that Donald Trump was planning a big speech on January 6th. Yes, the anniversary of the insurrection. He was gonna give a speech to, I can only assume, try once again to become president after the country rejected him. But it looks like it's not actually gonna happen. He has canceled the speech a day before he was due to give it. And so you're probably wondering why this was gonna be a big thing for him. He was very psyched about it. So why did he not do it? Well, there's a lot of reasons being provided by different people as to why, and that's always the most fun. When you have one reason for like not being able to go to something, you might disagree with it, but it's compelling. When you have like six, what the hell is going on? Well, let's go through some of these reasons. So some aides are saying they tried to stop him from doing it, not because they knew what he was gonna say was gonna be really bad or inflammatory, but that they had no idea what he was going to say. And more importantly, he had no idea what he was gonna say. Apparently, he was gonna make a scene and mock reporters, but he didn't know what he wanted his message to be. I don't see how that's different than literally any other address he's ever given, but it was compelling to them as a reason to stop him this time. One advisor said it was going to be awful, awful press, adding that the former president had announced the event without a clear plan. Now, I think it would have gotten some awful press for what I think he would have ended up actually saying. He would have denied that January 6th was bad. He would lie and say that Biden didn't legitimately win the election. All of that would have been bad press. They think it was gonna be a bad press just because it was going to be rambling and random. But anyway, it was supposed to happen tomorrow. It was gonna be counter-programming for some other things that are going on. JR, do you find that to be convincing? Would he cancel a big speech like that just because he didn't have a good like outline of the points he was gonna hit?
everything here makes sense for them trying to cancel or get him to cancel, except for him agreeing to cancel it. That's the only thing that kind of throws me off here, because as you said, every address that President Trump probably gave during his 4 years was unplanned and had no real purpose outside of, again, making fun of the press and causing a scene. Those are two things that he definitely plans to make sure that he had well put together, which I'm sure he had all that down. Then maybe some advisors, people close to him, maybe a friend, maybe family was like, hey, so it's going to be on January 6th. And what is it you exactly want to do? You want to look bad or do you want to look good? And he probably went through the whole thing of trying to convince him to not do it. And he probably still held on until, I don't know what could have been to help to convince him to pull the plug. That is really the most surprising part. I don't know what they could have told him, because this is his MO. This is how he operates. Maybe it was the promise of, oh, go and do it at a rally later, and then you can talk about your big crowd size. Maybe that's the only thing that can convince him to move this, is that it could feed his ego in another way somehow.
Yeah, well, so what you just alluded to, doing it to a big crowd, which I guess they would have had some sort of crowd, but I imagine there would be some difficulties in getting permitting for Donald Trump to address a big crowd in person, like on that day. Anyway, he is going to do an Arizona rally. So Maggie Haberman says that he's going to discuss what he was going to say at an Arizona rally instead, which I think is preferable, it not being for two reasons. One, it's not on the anniversary, which is good. And two, it's a much longer march from Arizona to the Capitol. But she also provided, according to several advisors who, by the way, this guy is no longer president. And so a lot has changed in his life. But one thing that hasn't changed is every single person around him immediately runs from conversations with him to the closest member of the media. They leak everything. But they say that it was becoming clear he wasn't likely to get the live TV coverage he was hoping for, which to me, that's a more plausible explanation as to why he would cancel that. Like him not having a plan, whatever, he'll just make fun of, I don't know, like CNN or something. I think he's fine with that. I think if he thinks nobody was going to cover it live, which by the way, we on the show yesterday were reading the advice of several people, including Media Matters, trying to pressure the media not to cover it live. And I don't know if I were to bet which ones would, if any, but I feel like there would have been a lot of pressure not to give him live unfiltered access to their viewers literally on January 6th. So that to me seems potentially like a better explanation.
Yeah, and it seems, again, everyone around him, everyone that supports him definitely saw this as a bad thing. Like, Donnie, we've been pushing this as not a big deal for a year. You can't come on and start promoting how great these people were, because we're saying they were Democrats, we're saying they're Antifa, we're saying that they were forced to do it by Democrats and Antifa. We're saying that it was them, but they're good patriots. We're trying to put so many good spins on this that make absolutely no sense. We need you to just chill out and not give us a different kind of spin that we can't keep up with that particular day. They're okay with him doing it on January 6th. Do not give them any credit for being any kind of way conscious of how horrible that day was and how bad this will look and how it will continue to bury them. All it is this them recognizing that they can't keep up with what it is he was gonna do. They're like, hey, if you tell us what you're gonna say, at least we can come up with some kind of BS plan to carry some more water for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and Lindsey Graham had a statement that I think is in that area. He apparently went golfing with Trump recently. Remember, he was done with him. He'd moved on. Whatever. We'll get to that quote in a bit. So Trump brought up the address to Graham, and Graham said there could be peril in doing a news conference. Best to focus on election reform instead, which I think is their honest approach. Like, they want the base to be fired up. And the base believing that the election was stolen from Trump is useful to them. That their right loves being a victim, and this is the ultimate victimhood complex. The election was stolen from us. Them believing that and literally attacking election officials probably is not in the direct interest of some people like Lindsey Graham. But focusing on election reform, that is certainly useful. Because whether like them passing their election reform laws at the state level are not going to make Donald Trump president in a month. That's just not going to happen. Nobody actually believes that. But it could make it easier for like a Lindsey Graham to win re-election, or for them to have a bigger majority in the House or the Senate coming up soon. So that is definitely a more useful thing to focus on from their point of view. But finally, I want to go to Laura Ingraham. Apparently had something to say about this press conference. She is like one of many people apparently behind the scenes that were not pushing for it to happen.
President Trump has decided to do a rally on January 6th. Given all the emotion and the lies about what happened and what did happen criminally, and some things were horrific that happened and shouldn't have happened that day. Is it smart for President Trump to do a rally on that particular day versus next week or the week before?
Yeah, or don't do it at all. Like you don't need to. But anyway, that was better than the vast majority of Fox News' commentary on the 6th. She admitted that it was bad, that some things happened that shouldn't. It was still obviously incredibly cowardly, but she is questioning what Trump is doing and tying it to January 6th. So that's something.
Yeah, it is a thing. The way Fox anchors that were basically in the advisory role for President Trump, like Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham, they have to speak to Donald Trump through the TV because they know he's probably watching. And they can't say it directly because it just sounds a little bit too, or it exposes a little bit too much of their direct connection and their advisory role for him. So they have to do it in question form. It's like they're on Jeopardy or something, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be like, so let me have a guest on to give Donald Trump the message in a question form to that guest, and hopefully Donald Trump hears me ask this question and we discuss how he shouldn't do this without me saying, hey, Donald, don't do it. Oh my God, it's a bad idea. How am I gonna cover for you now? So instead it's, okay, Alex, I'll take how not to destroy your legacy even further for 200 or whatever the hell it's for. And be like, oh, and the answer is. So do you think Donald Trump shouldn't screw this entire thing up by having a press conference and lambasting more people on January 6th, 1 year on the anniversary? Do you think so?
Yeah.
That's the question. And the next question, do you think President Trump should have gone and bowed down in Helsinki to Putin? Like you got to ask the question rather than saying you shouldn't have done these things, you crazy, insane human being. I don't know why you're doing this, but again, you have to do it with some kind of thin veil that no one really buys into.
Yeah, when it's a commentary show and she routinely makes direct comments about what she believes, but in this area can't. Or, you know, if you don't want to do it on the show, text him. You were texting the whole team about how terrified you were on January 6th. Would you lose the phone number in the interim? Anyway, okay, so let's jump to a slightly different angle on this. We are just shy of 1 year from last January 6th, and we've been doing a bit of a review of different aspects of this over the course of this week. Let's talk now about the effect that that event and the year after it have had on Donald Trump's control of the GOP, which I think is a somewhat complicated story. But some of those who in the immediate aftermath of the riot were very critical of him and were at least seemingly telegraphing that that was the line that couldn't be crossed. They were done with him, have changed. As we alluded to earlier in the show, Lindsey Graham had said, today all I can say is count me out. Enough is enough. I guess they cut off the microphone before we could hear him finish by saying enough is enough, except if like a month or two goes by and then he wants to play golf, because then that would be great. Golf is enough. I guess maybe that's what he was thinking. Kevin McCarthy called on Trump to accept his share of responsibility for the deadly violence. Trump never did that. But Kevin McCarthy seemingly doesn't care anymore. And so look, Graham was back golfing with him soon. McCarthy was traveling down to Mar-a-Lago. And look, even right after the violence, so many, 147 Republicans voted to overturn the election results. And I will say once again, totally pointlessly, I'll say it a million times, the fact that we cannot all at least admit in lockstep that that is a bad thing, that they tried to reverse the results of an election, is absolute insanity. And there are so many people, some of whom still have, they're respected, they have audiences who cannot come out and unambiguously say that. And I think it's incredibly
pathetic. Not only can they not say it, but they also have to find this other angle that Peter Navarro has tried to carve out to say that, oh, we tried to usurp the election through political means and trying to manipulate some laws and rules and regulations and anything we could. But you know, the violence is what changed our plan to try to politically usurp democracy and make sure it doesn't take hold and continue in this country. Okay, yeah, sure. It's a good alternative, Peter.
Yeah, seemingly the violence is bad only in that he thinks it stopped their political coup that they were doing. And he described it. We're not gonna play the Ari Melber stuff, but I think that's what you're alluding to. He just described, no, we look, they cloak it in, well, you know, we believe there was issues with the vote. It's just not true. Peter Navarro can say that however many times he wants. His view on this is irrelevant. Election officials have looked into it, they haven't found it. The Supreme Court decided not to get involved. Judges who looked at the evidence, which was provided in literally dozens of cases, decided that there was nothing there. Peter Navarro's opinion doesn't matter on that. Their cloak for this is nonsensical. The plan is obvious. We didn't like the results of the election. We thought maybe we could overturn it. Now, of course, again, as with everything, it's one of the themes of the last season of TDR is this is not like some sort of standard that they are describing to us that, oh no, we think it's acceptable that if you can, you overturn elections. They're not okay with Democrats doing that. They just believe they should be able to. They were stopped in doing it. I don't think that the violence is necessarily what stopped it. But that doesn't mean that they won't do it again. And the fact that they're going literally on MSNBC to describe, oh shucks, we almost got it a year out. If you believe that they have been chastened or if they've been disincentivized in doing this, they're worried about legal ramifications. I don't know how much clearer they can be that they are not experiencing any of that. They are eager for another try. And every day we get closer to round two on this thing.
The question is then now that Trump has decided not to have his address for the anniversary, somebody's gonna say something. They can't just stay silent and let the entire narrative go tomorrow about the reality. They've been pushing a false reality, some fantasy scenario for a year now. Someone else has to come out and stand for the president, former president, and make sure that the lessons continue. It could be MTG, it could be Gates, it could be any of these normal sycophants that are gonna carry his water. But somebody's gonna do it. I'm expecting that.
Yeah, I don't look, I would be perfectly happy for tomorrow to go by and it's just nothing. I don't want January 6th to become some sort of holiday for good or bad. I would love to just move on and not need it to be significant going on to the future. But for that to happen, it has to not be indicative of a new shift in normalization of political violence and, yep, you know, violent or nonviolent attempts to overturn election results. I would be fine for that. We're gonna have our show tomorrow. By the way, Anna Kasparian is gonna be joining me, so that's a pretty big get for the show for tomorrow. And we're certainly gonna talk about it. I would love to be able to move on, but we can't do that for reasons we're describing here. The fact that this insurrection index has identified 1,000 US public figures who aided the effort to overturn the election. Like those 147 congresspeople, that's a tiny part of it. It was in many states around the country. Most of those people are still in positions of power. And there have been multiple elections since then for secretaries of state, heads of election boards and things. That number would be far higher now than it was then. So I want to be able to move on from this and just go back to, you're running an election. If you win, you take power. If you don't, that's it. But that's just not the country that we live in right now.
And they're gonna continue to pursue it. Think about 2 years down the road. This is gonna become further and further from people's immediate memory. And they're gonna keep trying to change that narrative. And we know how Republicans and conservatives do when it comes to history that they don't like. They like to hide it. They like to not teach it. They like to have a different version of it being told to everyone. So be prepared to keep pushing back on that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Okay, with that, we are gonna go into our first break. When we come back, Sean Hannity, the focus of the January 6th commission, and we've got a walkout in Chicago, the teachers union there. So we're gonna talk about that and more after this. Okay, welcome back everyone. With that, let's jump into some more news. Sean Hannity is in the spotlight right now. The January 6th Commission apparently has requested that he respond to questions about his communications with former President Donald Trump and his staff in the days surrounding the January 6th riot. Now, we already knew a few weeks back that he had sent text messages to the team. We're gonna go back over a few of those, but there's new admissions as well, new communications that he had sent. We know that back on December 31st of 2020, he apparently wrote to Mark Meadows, "We can't lose the entire White House counsel's office. I do not see January 6th happening the way he is being told. After the 6th, he should announce he will lead the nationwide effort to reform voting integrity. Go to Florida and watch Joe mess up daily. Stay engaged. When he speaks, people will listen. So that's 1 week before January 6th. Sean Hannity was contacting Mark Meadows, former chief of staff, at that point, the chief of staff, and saying, don't do this. You have a crazy idea of what's going to happen on January 6th. And there, I think he means it's not going to turn out politically how he thinks. It's not going to result in him being president. So similar to what Lindsey Graham had been saying that we've already reviewed, just make this about voting reform. Just please don't overthrow democracy. That's crazy. Now, Sean Hannity, JR, is not clear there about whether he would like it to happen. He just seems to be making a calculation that it's not going to happen on January 6th.
Yeah, he's worried a bit about, again, the optics. Sean Hannity is the kind of conservative, which is like most Republicans before Donald Trump came into office, that they believed all the same stuff that Donald Trump believes in. They do believe in usurping democracy. They do believe that they should just always be the ones in power based off of manipulating the system. But they want to do it by manipulating the system and still continue to convince citizens that they're working for them, certain percentage of them, or that they're doing all this on the up and up, or that once you discover the things that they've been doing that aren't on the up and up, that those things actually are okay and it's what democracy is all about. It's about gerrymandering, which both parties do. It's about gerrymandering. It's about manipulating elections. It's about suppressing ballots. It's about making sure that certain voters can't vote. We know that's the calling card for the Republican Party, but they want the effort is supposed to go into masking that. Donald Trump doesn't know how to mask anything. So now the battle became, he's not masking it well. No, yes, I do want to stop democracy, but not like this. It's going to be too hard to explain away violence. Yeah. We can explain away just stopping elections by saying that, hey, they're coming for you, when really we're coming for them.
Exactly. Yeah, like, look, it's interesting because these are clearly people that don't have any sort of like hardcore ideological opposition to a fascist takeover of the US government. They don't mind that. But I do think that doesn't mean that for all of them, it's the best option. Like some of them might think that they can ride that to greater relevance or money. But think about if you're Sean Hannity, what do you want to happen politically? I mean, you might think, well, he's a Republican, so clearly he wants Republicans to be in charge. And I think in general, yes, especially if they pass, you know, tax cuts that help him out. But I think there's a case to be made that he would love to have Joe Biden be president. That certainly makes his job at Fox a little bit easier. And literally a violent overthrow of the government, what that is, even if it ideologically is in line with Sean Hannity, what is, it's not stable. Sean Hannity is a rich guy. He doesn't want actual chaos. He would love Republicans to be in charge forever because then his taxes will never go up. That'll be convenient for him, but he doesn't want political violence that could potentially harm him or that could tank the markets, you know, and wreck his investments, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Like there are people in that movement who might not be, you know, 10, 20, 30 millionaires, who are much more willing, more radical in that side. And that doesn't, all that I'm saying is not saying that Sean Hannity, like if January 6th had gone even worse and they had literally killed Mike Pence, I still don't think Sean Hannity would have done like a long monologue about how the right has gone wrong and they need to immediately about face and change things. There are lots of these people who are perfectly willing to go along, but that doesn't mean it's their preference. And I think that's coming out in these text messages.
It seems that way. I'll let you. I know we got a lot.
Okay, so on the 10th, he wrote to Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan. He can't mention the election again ever. So bear in mind, this is after January 6th. Don't mention the election again ever. I did not have a good call with him today. And worse, I'm not sure what is left to do or say. And I don't like not knowing if it's truly understood. Ideas? So we're past January 6th. He's talking with the former, or the still at that point, the president. And he's like, I don't even know what to do with this guy. Because remember, Trump is not, in 2 weeks' time at that point, he's not going to go to the inauguration. He's not conceding. He's not admitting that he lost. This again looks like Hannity just wanting stability. He wants, okay, like we're going to fight back. And by the way, you can make all these stupid, dumb, lying claims about election integrity so that we can strip people's right to vote and we can gerrymander to hell. We can do all this stuff. But let's do it the way we've been doing it. Like they've come up with all these tactics that don't require coups. They disenfranchise people. They strip, you know, like low SEO communities voting booths and things like that. Like you remember, JR, multiple elections over the past decade, Democrats have won, like for governors. And before they even get into office, all the power is stripped away from it. They already have all of these tactics. They don't need a mob, like, because that just looks too bad. You, like, the whole thing about the frog in the pot is, you don't all of a sudden just jam the heat on really fast. That scares people. They're worried about you, the frog, being scared. And yeah. I think that's clear in that.
Yeah, it's again like similar thing. There's already a process in place where they make sure that people just are flowing with this, with their policies, which are none, and their ability and their attempts to try and continue to take over the country or continue to make sure they're never fully out of power. So even when they're not, which they're not now, they're still controlling the agenda because they still have enough of their claws in the game or enough of allies like corporate donors that can buy off people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema to continue to keep them in power. Where Joe Manchin is still talking about Republicans when we're talking about anything as if they're in power. But they can still push this whole narrative that, you know, these Democrats are coming for so much power hunger and they're taking over the country and they're killing your lives and destroying you. They're not in power because they're not doing anything. So, but they need both sides of this to continue to play. And Sean Hannity and people like Sean Hannity are doing this and thinking, man, you're like the game is already set. Why are we trying to flip this upside down? This is crazy.
Yeah, 100%. And this is us trying to understand his frame of mind. But that again does not mean that he's going to openly oppose it. And I want to demonstrate that right now. So, on the 31st, we showed you him contacting the chief of staff being like, dude, they're not going to take over the country on January 6th. Stop this. Go to Florida. Make speeches or whatever. Just stop it. On the 5th, he says, I'm very worried about the next 48 hours. I believe that was to Meadows. So the week before, the night before, it's not going to work. I'm worried about what they're doing. What does he say that night on his show publicly? So all that is private. Now publicly, here is a bit of his program from that night.
Tomorrow, Senator Ted Cruz and about a dozen other Republicans, they are promising to vote against certification. They're demanding audits of the 2020 elections. Texas Senator Ted Cruz joins us. Senator, thank you for being with us. Big day tomorrow. Big crowds apparently showed up to the point where the West Wing could hear the music and the chanting of the people that were there already. And this all kicks off in the morning tomorrow.
And it did, in fact, kick off in the morning. Now, what you'll see if you go watch that full show is he talked about the crowds and he talked about the effort to decertify the vote. Nowhere did he say Ted Cruz and a bunch are going to try to decertify the vote and it's not going to go the way they think. That's my actual position. He didn't say that. And he didn't say, hey, big crowds assembled and I'm like really worried about what's going to happen with those crowds. So all of his actual positions, which might be a little bit less psychotic for his character on TV, he can't actually say any of that. And so he was rah-rahing both efforts the night before January 6th.
It's if nothing else people can find from this whole process from January 6th is that you can determine what the actual mindset is of many conservatives from pundits to politicians from their true mindset versus what they're willing to do once the strong man comes in and says, no, you're doing it my way. That's why they follow Trump to the ends of the earth. Because he's the one that's going to yank their chain and be like, come this way. And they have no other choice but to do that. Because the few that don't, they're kicked out of the party. They're rhinos. Now you're Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney. Like you're off in exile now from the party. Yeah. And that is more important than anything else. You can have your own points of view and your principles that you think you have are principles, which is like no taxes for me. You can have that stuff. But if you cross anything else, if you try to have some kind of a limit, a bottom to your barrel, oh, you're out of this party. There's no bottom to this barrel.
Yeah. Well, super fast, I just want to let you know the response to this, like his text coming out. Sean Hannity, he talked about it being a phony committee, a rigged investigation with a predetermined outcome, but a predetermined outcome into an event that you didn't think should have happened. Why are you pretending? We know what you said. It's just all so transparent. And Trump has responded to the release of the text saying, I disagree with Sean on that statement and the facts are proving me right. No, they're not. There's no facts that are proving you're right. It's just not like all of these people were trying to stop you from doing this. And I get it. Like, he doesn't necessarily care too much about that because now they're all marching in lockstep again. But at least it's been revealed. Again, it's that thing where we're driving towards a brick wall. It's still a mile away, but we're getting more and more clarity on what the brick wall looks like that we're about to hit. Anyway, let's jump really fast into these videos. We alluded to them yesterday, so let's jump into this.
January 6th attack was not the Republicans nor Trump. It was the Democrats were behind it all. They're the ones that caused it all.
Do you really believe that?
I know it.
So that is Donny O'Sullivan of CNN, who I think is my favorite part of CNN now for some time, actually. He like gives me Emma Vigeland vibes. At least in this respect, that he goes and talks to Trump supporters. So a year after January 6th, what do Republicans think? Well, look, they could have come out of that event thinking we've been moving in a dangerous direction. And it didn't just all of a sudden develop on the 6th with the Proud Boys and the militia members and all the QAnon. Like, they had been going in an increasingly deranged, dangerous direction for a long time. But when you talk to them, that is not a lesson that they have drawn from the 6th. They have accepted all of the defenses of the 6th, even when they're directly contradictory. And you'll see it in a little bit more of Donny O'Sullivan's interview.
There is no way that a Republican would act that way. And there is no way that Trump had anything to do with what happened on January 6th.
But what about all the Trump supporters that have been charged and indicted?
Because it's all Democratic judges and people that were on the take from the Democrats.
I think the whole reporting of it is a giant hoax. We are very peaceful people. So it was a total setup. To me, it was the FBI had set it up. I don't believe that they were Trump supporters that did that.
I really don't think Trump had much to do with it, than people that were supporters for him. Some were involved, but I think they were enticed by the FBI and by you know, undercover agents.
So, Jared, what we've got here, I think, is basically climate denial. So they have set up multiple layers that you can hide behind. You can just say it's not happening at all. Like with climate, it's not warming. With this, no, they weren't Republicans. We're peaceful. No Republican would do this. Or for people who might have like three brain cells and they realize that that is a difficult position to hold. Well, okay, maybe one or two were there, but it was all the FBI. And that is the role that Tucker Carlson has played. He did his stupid monologues about it and he made his Alex Jones style propaganda documentary. And now tens of millions of Republicans just believe it and will never believe otherwise. This was a total false flag. The FBI made this thing up.
That was, and that's been the plan from the beginning when it comes to throwing different scenarios into the reality of the situation, because it'll stick with certain people in different ways. So if you have, you know, you have your legion of minions, and you got to tell them whatever it is, and then for Kevin it'll stick, and then for you know, for Jared maybe it won't, but you got to give Jared something else for him to stick. So just throw everything. It's Antifa first. Makes no sense, but some people hate Antifa so much that the blinders are on. Oh, Antifa, that's right, it's Antifa. Oh no, it's FBI, okay, blinders. So the FBI blinders people, they're gonna take FBI. The Antifa blinders people, they're gonna take Antifa. The people who are, like you said, the 3%, the three brain cells are gonna go, okay, there was some Trump supporters there.
Yeah.
But they were enticed by the FBI. They were there to see things. They just walked in and said, oh, I thought this was a tour. So anything, like the reason why you have seven different scenarios is because you need seven different types of idiots to buy into it in any kind of way that they can. Yeah. And then go and espouse that same stuff. That lady said that we're peaceful people. We're peaceful people who one of your representatives that you guys love, Madison Cawthorn, continues to talk about civil war and how, yep, we need to take up arms against our brothers and shed some blood. What part of peaceful is that? What part of peaceful is that? What part of peaceful is your president then saying when people were protesting violence by police officers to go in there and start cracking some skulls and take people off the streets and then start harming them? What part of peaceful is that? That's your president that you said couldn't possibly incite any kind of this violence. But he started his entire campaign with rallies where he said, get him out of here. I wish they would crack their heads like they used to back in the day and drag them out of here.
Don't be too nice.
You know how you act.
100%. Yeah, you're totally right. And by the way, like, okay, so you're just peaceful. So couldn't, like, Republicans are peaceful. Those people weren't peaceful. Ergo, they weren't Republicans. Okay, so they're not Republicans. Okay, so there's somebody else. Maybe they're Antifa, maybe whatever, but they're definitely not Republicans. Okay, then why has Marjorie Greene spent a year going to their prison cells and saying they're political prisoners? But why is she doing that for the lefties that apparently were riding since they're not conservatives? Why did Tucker Carlson say they were totally justified in what they did? Wait, but it was just fake, right? He says it was FBI, it was fake. But it was justified that the FBI was doing that, or that all the people that showed up were right to be there? But they didn't actually believe it. They're certainly not responsible because it was the FBI. Or Trump. Trump was going to give a speech about how awesome it was. He's been saying recently how great January 6th was, but it wasn't his people. Why is he applauding non-Republicans who are rioting to make Republicans look bad? I want to grab that woman and be like, how does any of this make sense?
Doesn't.
But of course, it doesn't have to, because again, it's different facts for one of the seven different types of idiots. Basically, and they don't have to be consistent. It's all designed to make them feel like our side has not done anything bad. We're the best ever. We deserve to be in charge for the rest of time, or at the very least 1,000 years.
At least.
Anyway, okay, we're gonna take our second break. We're burning through this hour, so we're gonna come back to the Chicago walkout. Don't go anywhere. Okay, let's jump into it. The nationwide debate over what education should look like amidst this now record-breaking phase of the COVID pandemic got a little bit more complex today. Leaders of Chicago's public schools canceled classes after the Chicago Teachers Union voted to switch to remote learning due to the surge in COVID cases. 73% voted in this vote, 73% said that unless there were additional protections against COVID, they would not go back into in-person learning. And apparently 20,000 of the union's 25,000 rank and file members actually submitted their electronic ballot yesterday. So this is apparently very representative of what teachers in Chicago believe. So they're like, nationally, there's quite a bit of remote instruction going on, even in that state. But Chicago has rejected that of going back to full remote learning, saying that it's disastrous for children's learning and mental health, which, by the way, might be true. Like, we talked yesterday on the show about the mental health impact of this continued pandemic. I don't think it's as simple as the effect we're seeing is just because of remote learning. You should understand that the context is the country has gone absolutely insane. And kids are looking out there and seeing that most of the country doesn't give a damn if everybody dies. So there's a lot of things that could be impacting their mental health. But this certainly isn't helping, I guess. The union says, okay, that may be true, but we're older. There's COVID everywhere. We will get sick. We will be the ones who die. And we don't want to go back until you do something about it. And so they voted to pause in-person learning and work remotely until January 18th. So not off into eternity. The next couple of weeks, basically, or until COVID-19 cases fall below a particular threshold. And bear in mind, yesterday they reported over 1 million cases. So there's quite a bit of time until that threshold is reached. Anyway, union members were instructed to try and log into teaching systems today, even though the district said there would be no instruction and didn't distribute devices to students ahead of the union's vote. So right now, Lori Lightfoot, mayor of Chicago, has started locking Chicago public school teachers and staff out of their Google classrooms. Says it's an illegal work action, a walkout, which perhaps maybe it is, arguably. But I think that there is a debate to be had about, is this exactly what a union is for? To stop workers from being sent back into inherently dangerous environments. Anyway, JR, I know you have a child. You've been dealing with this back and forth of remote and in-person learning. What do you think about what happened in Chicago?
Yeah, it's different for every district, as I'm sure everyone knows. But this is one of those situations. The big breaking news of this story is that teachers are human beings. They also follow what's going on with a virus that has killed 830,000 Americans. so they don't want to be exposed to it. That's what potentially whatever debate that could possibly be had over this is that whether or not these teachers are rightfully full rights to do something like this, like protect their lives. And I can't believe they're gonna walk out and we're gonna have to punish them over this and make sure they have no access because these kids are being punished over this. Are the teachers being punished? Are the teachers having to be exposed to circumstances that are irresponsibly being put in front of them? Maybe if you had some level of measures that made them comfortable, maybe more of them would be willing to come in. When you have an overwhelming number of people willing to do this, a part of one group, it means you're not doing something right on the other side. The common denominator is that something's wrong, that the majority of people here are saying that have to deal with what's wrong. Maybe address it and you won't have to deal with these kinds of issues, or at least try to address it so that you don't have this conflict. Why does everything have to be you're fighting against each other? Some people made a point. If you pay attention to it because they have a reason to make that point and try to do something about it, maybe you can get somewhere. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's an adversarial all the time. Who says teachers are these a-holes who are trying to destroy your kids' lives every second? They get paid $40,000 a year to do this stuff, and we're just gonna jam them back in? I thought conservatives and maybe anti-vaxxers, I don't know in general, I thought they support the teachers. I thought they said, oh, teachers, we gotta make sure the teachers do the right thing and push them this way and all that, and we're interfering on all these board meetings and everything.
Yep.
But now we're pushing back on them when they want to save their own lives. What happens when you have teachers that are getting sick and can't teach? Then you're forced to go to remote learning because you didn't plan ahead. It's such a simple thing. We learned organizational skills in sixth grade about how to put your life together and plan something. And then they can't do it and they're grown adults who've been elected to office. Why is this so hard?
Yeah, and it's a great point. There's this very weird idea of what should be required. Like, so these parents think, okay, I have a kid in school, thus I am a god descended on heaven. If there's a single book that I don't want, I will burn this school to the ground. No kid should have to learn with this book here. You should have to teach surrounded by disease spewing kids. So like, what is a right and what isn't is we're in, you know, Wonderland right now. But anyway, look, it is complicated. Kids staying home for a very long period of time and trying to learn is probably not great. I think I think they're losing out on something, but I also think it's bad for them. I think it's obviously bad for the parents. But that doesn't mean that, well, you know, to solve this equation, some teachers gotta die. And me, a non-teacher, gets to mandate that. Yep, mandates all of a sudden, pretty popular when it's teachers dying. Anyway, I want to show you a tweet from one of these teachers who goes by the name Lord Dickleby on Twitter, which is hilarious, but it's Twitter. You get to have a funny name if you want. Anyway, he says, half of the middle school is in quarantine. More than half of my fifth graders are out sick. I voted to work remotely because my school is not safe. I want to teach today, but CPS locked me out. CTU Local 1 didn't call a strike or a work stoppage. We called for safety. They're not striking. They still want to work. They walked out physically. They didn't walk out of the job. Let's just be clear about that. And by the way, Jeff Shirk on Twitter adds, this is important context, I should add, that under the agreement CPS and Lightfoot signed off on last February, schools would be remote right now because of the city's current positivity rate. They're acting like doing something they themselves agreed to only 11 months ago is unreasonable. That was the agreement a year ago. You are gonna go remote if the positivity rate goes above a certain point. Well, that's where it's at right now. So other than it's been a year, we don't care as much, what's the argument for changing that deal? I don't think there is one.
We don't like it. It's pulling back on the deal. I thought we're the biggest, baddest, most awesome country in the history of the world. We can't figure out how to mitigate and by the way, yes, there are issues with kids having learned remotely constantly for this long. If you don't like it, find a way to make sure they don't have to.
Yeah. It's complicated, obviously. By the way, really fast, super fast. Joe Scarborough this morning, if you don't want to teach, don't teach, quit. Just stay at home and stop teaching children, okay? You are either ignorant when it comes to science or you just don't want to be in classes. Says the rich guy who's not gonna be teaching the classes. The Five on Fox earlier this week was criticizing the effort to go to remote learning in schools. They were literally broadcasting remotely because of a COVID scare at Fox. They were remote criticizing teachers who want to be remote. They're just a couple of schmucks around a table, and they were terrified of having to do that. But they want parents to be surrounded, or teachers to be surrounded by kids, many of whom have COVID apparently.
Just off, fresh off of a break, hanging out with family, traveling, seeing who knows who.
Every one of them has Omicron right now. Anyway, with that, we're gonna close out our hour with something very different. Yeah, that's a great point there too. Lori Lightfoot's daughter goes to a private school that's been remote. Again, it is suffering for thee, but not for me. You should have just become rich, really. I don't know why you slacked off on becoming incredibly wealthy and privileged. Anyway, let's jump to something very different. Last year was not good for former governor Andrew Cuomo, but the future is actually looking a little bit brighter because many of the legal investigations into his behavior are steadily dropping away on a number of different topics, including the claims of sexual harassment and sexual assault. So the top prosecutor in Albany County is not going to be pursuing a misdemeanor complaint against Cuomo. They apparently announced that they're dropping it, which had been filed back in October. Now, why is this? Well, Brittany Commisso, former assistant to Cuomo, had told investigators for the AG's office that Cuomo had grabbed her buttocks during hugs and during an event at the executive mansion, reached under her blouse and grabbed her breasts. This is activity that obviously no one thinks is in any universe acceptable. But the complaint will be withdrawn, and the district attorney is going to close the investigation, saying that he found her credible, but that the available evidence wouldn't allow his office to meet the burden of proof. So he's saying, hey, I believe that she's telling the truth, but we can't prove it apparently in court. And so that is now going away. We had recent decisions by district attorneys in Nassau and Westchester counties not to bring charges against him on different misconduct allegations. And so with this, virtually all of the avenues, at least currently being pursued for any sort of legal consequences for the sexual assault activity, is basically evaporating day by day.
Man, you know, I'm mostly disappointed in myself that I didn't see this coming. I thought it was one of the few times that because of what we're seeing and what has been happening, that there's gonna be some level of a pursuit to this type of justice to come up with something. But it doesn't matter. I mean, the sliver of that hope, I was thinking, well, you know, yeah, they don't really come after Democrats for this type of stuff either, but maybe this time because they really don't like Cuomo.
Well, and he had already stepped down.
You know?
Yeah, it seemed like there was blood in the water, maybe. I don't know what I expected. I think that there's still the possibility of civil stuff, of maybe the women getting money for the devastating experience that they've been through. And look, his political future obviously is shaky, although don't rule out him trying to come back in a couple of years or anything. But legally, yeah, it's certainly not looking great. Apparently, of the roughly 1,400 cases like Cuomo's brought a typical year in New York, almost 4 in 10 are dismissed or dropped. So I don't know, that might make you feel a little bit more comfortable with this. Well, look, this is kind of the way it happens. But when it's a powerful, rich person, a lot of people are still gonna think, yeah, but is this like the others? And there's just always gonna be that fear that, power is being used behind the scenes. Can't prove anything like that necessarily, but yeah, it doesn't look good.
So this flouting country that's the rebels that go against the grain of the man to start our beginnings, man, we sure do kowtow and bow to the rich and powerful readily on a daily basis, no matter what the topic is. And it's pretty pathetic, honestly.
Yeah, definitely. And by the way, so this is the sexual misconduct allegations. He faced a lot of pressure over his behavior when it came to the nursing homes and COVID and all that during the pandemic. The DA is not in Manhattan is not going to be charging him in that. That came out just yesterday. So we look. And by the way, if you haven't been following this, the state attorney general's office back in 2021 accused the state of drastically undercounting COVID-19 deaths in the facilities. He obviously benefited in terms of public opinion by a false belief that fewer people had died than actually had. And he and his aides are implicated in that. But apparently, That's gonna go away too. Like, this is how justice works in America. He lost his job. Maybe that's the most we can hope for in the short term.
That's what probably they think. They said justice. I mean, he lost his job. That's the biggest thing. It's great, right? I mean, that's justice.
And even that, you know, we didn't have much reason to expect would actually happen. Not in America. Anyway, we'll keep watching on this, but we just wanted to give you that quick update. Anyway, if you're watching on our linear platforms, thank you for watching the Damage Report today. There is more to come on the members app, YouTube, and Twitch. We're gonna be getting into a big meanwhile in Jesse Waters and Kyle Rittenhouse. Oh, it's gonna be fun, or what passes for fun here. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.